For those looking for a liberatory martial arts learning approach and curriculum, we've created Liberation Martial Arts. It doesn't just teach you martial arts, it's also an approach to learning movement skills. The whole point of our program is to remove the need for a coach, to liberate you from the need of top-down instruction and toxic gyms. If you already have a coach and a gym, then you can apply our learning approach to improve your progress. Or maybe you also need a supplemental martial arts community as a counter to the commercial gym you go to. You can actually apply our learning approach to learn anything, and our practitioners are. They're applying it to all sorts of things, whether physical, mental, or even personal. It's just a radically different approach to learning. Thanks to DJ Gaia, Chen, Catherine Breen, and Naveed for signing up. Sign up for Liberation Martial Arts at the Southpaw Pod Patreon or support us by signing up for one of the other tiers and help support this project while also getting access to bonus content and uncut versions of our shows without breaks or interruptions. My family and I have been navigating a lot of recent health and financial challenges, so if you've been putting off your support, now would be a great time to sign up. There's also ways to make one-time contributions. I'll add a link in the show notes. This is Sam.
And this is Fight Study.
This episode was sponsored by SH, Alejandro, RJ, Thomas, Rachel, Yuli, Sarah, Jelani, and New Guy. Sponsors not only get a mention on every episode, but also a monthly training session with me. Sign up on Patreon. Sam here to discuss UFC 300. This card was meant to be the greatest in the company's history, and it did not disappoint. Also, if you like this analysis and want to take your time reflecting on it, you can find the transcript on the Southpaw Pod Patreon. Since so many fights were bangers, starting from the early prelims, rather than working our way backward from the main event, let's start with the first fight that stuck out for me. And by stuck out, I mean what had interesting moments that I could draw attention to that viewers, commentators, and social media might have missed. In the night's first fight, we saw Davison Figueiredo defeating Cody Garbrandt by rear strangle. Both fighters have similar striking habits. They like to close and open space, a behavior seen in point karate and taekwondo. This means they like to hop in close to each other and then hop away. This is how Garbrandt fought. But Figueiredo adapted his behavior to counter the style because he knew it so well. Right away, Figueiredo tried to time Garbrandt's closure rate to wrap him up for a takedown. Of course, if this is your first time trying to time something, you'll be a bit off. This is why Figueiredo got hit a few times and fell over when Garbrandt collided with him, and at one point, they even collided heads. Figueiredo needed more space to time Garbrandt, so he began to back up to draw Garbrandt in. That gave Figueiredo the extra time to time Garbrandt and take him down at the end of round one. Since getting knocked out a bunch of times, Garbrandt has changed his behavior by adding in kicks where he's effectively a grounded fighter. This allows him to kick without getting countered. Mix that in with calf kicks and speed, and this is how Garbrandt tries to win from the outside on points if he's afraid to close space. If Figueiredo shows too much power, Garbrandt will play more from the outside and kick. If Garbrandt doesn't have confidence, he won't close space. Figueiredo can't scare him away. To keep Garbrandt coming in, Figueiredo has to be somewhat passive. Whether that's intentional or because he couldn't avoid those calf kicks and land his punches, Garbrandt got confident, especially since Figueiredo was backing up. In round two, Garbrandt felt himself and charged in, getting wrapped up and taken down. The end was academic. I don't know if Figueiredo knew before the fight that he would be so much better than Garbrandt on the ground. But if he didn't know, once they hit the ground, he knew right away. Since grappling is so haptic, you get a quick sense of their ability once you feel someone on the ground. That does a lot to conserve energy and for moving without hesitation, making you even better on the ground. Speaking of differences on the ground, with Jessica Andrade and Marina Rodriguez, Andrade was clearly better on the ground. One of the things you do when you're not proficient on the ground is not to move as one whole unit, but as segments. Rodriguez fought on the ground with her arms rather than her body, which, in my opinion, is why she got so arm-weary and couldn't sustain her comeback. Even before Andrade landed anything significant on the feet, Rodriguez began to grab a clinch. Why would she do that? Because her arms were tired and she needed to rest. She lost by split decision and it was a close fight. And it would have been perfectly acceptable if the decision had gone the other way. Being better in one phase of MMA gives you a lot of confidence, which is why Andrade can take the damage she took. Rodriguez, even without better wrestling, could have performed much better if she hadn't seized every offensive opportunity that she saw. Just because you can hit someone, does that mean you should? Every shot exerts energy. Rodriguez didn't seem like she was pacing herself for a decision or even a knockout. She saw an opportunity and she took the opportunity, which works fine when she's only striking, but it's different when she used her arms up in a different phase of the game. Part of energy conservation and pace is using feints, or what I call empty cues. They cost almost nothing, but make the opponent react. There's also how you throw your shots. Rather than using strength, you can use momentum from your kinetic chain and the weight of your hands or shins. Another way to think about momentum is coasting. Strength is like using gas going downhill when you can get the same result coasting. Coasting is about letting inertia and momentum do most of the work. Spark a little inertia and coast. Coaches sometimes call this flicking. Propel your hand or foot and let the force of mass do the rest. If none of this makes sense, you can also just throw lighter shots. These are things to consider when we discuss Weili Zhang, Alexander Rakic, and Arman Tsarukyan later. In the first fight of the regular prelims, Diego Lopez knocked Sadiq Yusuf out in the first round. Some fighters are big, some fighters are fast, but Diego Lopez is both big and fast. You can't bully him like you can other fast fighters who happen to be small and fast. You're not going to be faster than them as you would be against other bigger fighters. Your opportunities are limited. He also has shown an incredible gas tank, which limits your window of opportunity even further. Now, by fast, what do I mean? In the context of this fight, I mean two things. Lopez has the speed to seize opportunities before they close. He also has the speed to find opportunities as they appear. And unlike Rodriguez, he has the power to end fights with one opportunity. Yusuf likes to grab double collar ties when he's in close. However, he grabs it like a wrestler, bent over, rather than like a Thai boxer with hips in. This left his head exposed. Once he grabbed Lopez, Lopez punched him several times to the body until he found the opening for the uppercut. His speed gave him the time to try a bunch of attacks until he found the one that worked. That rocked Yusuf. Yusuf seemed to recover and grabbed the double collar tie again, but in exactly the same way, with his head down. This time Lopez seized the opportunity immediately, which led to the ending sequence. Speaking of things people miss or misunderstand, I think Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison is going to be really misunderstood. People will see this fight as Holm making mistakes and playing right into Harrison. But Holm didn't necessarily do anything wrong. She was trying to fight the perfect fight, and when that's your only path to victory, your window for victory is really narrow. Home is smaller, weaker, slower, more shop-worn, and older. There's also a huge gap in the ground abilities between her and Harrison. For Home to win, she has to hit and stay away from Harrison and away from the cage. That's already a lot of conditions to overcome to win this fight. Harrison used stand switches and heavy shots to push Home back toward the fence. It's something Michael Chandler does to set up his power shots. For Harrison, it's to set up her takedowns. When Home got near the fence, she circled away from Harrison's power side. Harrison threw a right high kick. Home had to stop to defend the kick. That's when Harrison initiated the clinch. It wasn't Home who initiated it. It's just that the first high kick attempt to clinch was clumsy and Home had an opportunity to get into a better position and reverse Harrison when it went to the ground. In round two, the same sequence happened, but this time, the kick to takedown was much smoother, and with enough time on the clock, Harrison finished the fight. I don't know if Home, at this stage in her career, could have done anything to eventually avoid getting grabbed by Harrison. In my opinion, she did the best she could. That was the perfect execution of the game plan, but it still didn't matter because it was a mismatch. A note to our listeners, if you love the Southpaw Project, please support us and help us get paid for our labor by financially supporting us on Patreon. This will give you access to exclusive bonus content, like transcripts, early releases of Southpaw Deep Space Nine, our fictional narrative podcast, Fighters Brew, break-free versions of our shows without interruptions like you're hearing now, bonus articles, Fighters Brew transcripts with extra content, Liberation Martial Arts Online, as well as our private chat group on Discord. You can also make one-time donations at Ko-Fi or show your solidarity by wearing our swag. You can find all pertinent links at southpawpod.com. Aljamain Sterling moved up to featherweight to defeat a game Calvin Kattar. Psychologically, Kattar had a lot going against him, as he's only won once in his last four. Lack of confidence and pressure hurts performance. Then there's Sterling, who's very sticky. Sterling's fighting behavior is themed around contact. He throws shots like he's casting a net. It's wide. So he will not only touch his opponent with his fist or foot, but also his arms and legs. Having advanced cues on his movements counterintuitively works to his advantage. When his opponents see his shots coming, they block or charge in. Now he can grab you. He throws spam and throwaway shots, moving forward and backward in either stances because he wants his opponents to engage. He's almost making his grabs into strikes. If you don't engage with them, he'll win on points. If you do, he'll stick to you like an octopus. If you see what's coming, he'll grab you. If you don't see what's coming, he'll hit you or grab you. Kattar fell into a typical Sterling fight. Get outpointed and then wrapped up. Sterling has a really effective and unusual style of MMA that's really hard to beat. If you're a grappler interested in MMA, emulate it. Jiří Procházka knocked Alexander Rakic out in the last fight of the regular prelims, continuing his streak of finishes, whether he finishes his opponent or he's the one being finished. This happens because either you hurt and finish him, which is pretty rare, the finish part that is, or he counters you. This is all predicated on Procházka leaving himself open. He's been hurt plenty of times, but he's really hard to finish. Prochaska's head is the bait. His first line of defense isn't blocking, but dodging or rolling with punches. Even when he gets hit, he's often rolling with the shot. Rolling with a shot doesn't mean he's not taking any damage, just less damage. He's also not always rolling with shots. Sometimes he just eats it. So backing all of this up is an iron chin. Prochazka seems to have incredible cardio and durability, but I suspect a lot of that comes from barely throwing shots. So he doesn't expend a lot of energy. When you're not tired, you can take better shots. When you're not tired, you can also burst into action when your opponent is hurt or tired. Striking, like grappling, is also haptic, especially since the gloves are open fingers. It's just not as haptic as grappling. So with MMA gloves, fighters feel when they make contact. Since Prochazka rolled with shots, every time Rakic made contact, he felt it and gained confidence. It makes fighters attack Prochazka to the head even more, which can make you tired, as we saw with Marina Rodriguez. Like Harrison, Prochazka built off the high kick, but this time it was the left high kick. Two patterns were emerging. Rakic tended to dip to his right against punches. Secondly, Prochazka changed height before throwing a right punch. In the first round, after eating numerous punches, Prochazka changed height. Rakic dipped to his right, and Prochazka caught him with a left high kick. Rakic was rocked. He fired a blind left hook and ate a 1-2, but was able to survive. Despite what analysts tell you, fighting's not rocket science. In round one, something worked. Harrison saw that with Holm, and she went for it again in round two, and it worked like butter. Prochazka did the same. In round two, Prochazka changed height and threw the left high kick. Rakic was rocked and threw the left hook. Prochazka answered with the 1-2. Rakic, on wobbly legs, trying to survive, found some space. Prochazka changed height again and threw a left high kick. Rakic ate it again and threw a left hook, and Prochazka fired a 1-2. Prochazka threw more punches. Rakic fell over, and Prochazka pounded him out. There were lots of things Rakic also read and landed on Prochazka. The difference was that Prochazka ate them and kept coming. Rakic got hurt. If this was boxing or kickboxing, this would really not be fair. But this is MMA, so there are other paths to victory. Rakic has excellent wrestling, which we didn't get to see. Prochazka, like Figueiredo, showed how confidence can work against fighters. Arman Tsarukyan defeated Charles Oliveira by split decision on the main card. One difference between Tsarukyan and Islam Makhachev is how Makhachev uses the takedown threat to win on the feet. Tsarukyan doesn't have that same composure and tends to rush for takedowns and finishes. Even his kick where he fell in round one, he tried to throw that kick so hard that he was already off balance, which made it easy for Oliveira to kick his supporting leg out from under him. I also want to mention how slippery the mats were. Fighters were slipping all night. That could have also played into the fall. Even at the end of round three, Tsarukyan was on top and posted his leg out, and then his foot slipped and he fell over. Oliveira fought arguably the best two wrestlers in the division and lost. He's only ever won by decision three times. He goes for the finish every fight, which makes him dangerous and exciting to watch, but like Prochazka, that limits his abilities to win a fight. But also like Prochazka, he's able to finish fighters because they're trying to finish him. But in this fight, if neither can finish the other, and one is the superior wrestler, usually the wrestler wins. Now let's talk about the BMF, Baddest Motherfucker, title fight, which may be one of the greatest MMA fights of all time and probably the best finish of all time. You have to think about the context. This is for the BMF title at the biggest MMA event in history. Max Holloway is the underdog. He's fighting BMF champion Justin Gaethje, who's trying to get another title shot. Gaethje had just beaten Dustin Poirier for the BMF title. Poirier not only beat Holloway twice, but the last time was at 155. Then Holloway looked better than ever, looked more powerful than he ever has, and with 1 second left in the final round, finished Gaethje with a one-punch walk-away knockout after challenging him to stand in the middle of the octagon, giving Gaethje his best chance to win the fight, to see who the baddest motherfucker is. It was Holloway's best KO of his career against the biggest and hardest puncher of his career. It's not about the performance in isolation, but all that context that made this fight and its ending incredible. If you stop thinking about GOAT status purely on undefeated records and think about accomplishments, divisional depth, and strength of schedule, Holloway is up there. He's still one of the youngest fighters on the roster, and he's already a legend. If you love the Southpaw Project, become one of our financial supporters. It'll help us supplement the cost of running this project, the incredible time and energy we put into it 7 days a week, and you'll be giving us some breathing room, not only to juggle Southpaw with our day jobs, but also to expand Southpaw into other areas. We can't exist without your contributions. Show your Southpaw solidarity by supporting us at southpawpod.com. A bigger and stronger Holloway with the same hand speed and vision ended up being too much for Gaethje. But more than that, surprisingly, Holloway's back kick became a difference maker in this fight. I don't know if I've ever seen that happen in the UFC before. I've seen a back kick hurt someone or swing the momentum, but to see it as such a consistent tool was refreshing. Holloway never missed with that kick. Gaethje tended to crouch when space was closed, which fed perfectly into Holloway's back kick. Then you got the added size, and Holloway's punches just landed differently. When there were around 10 seconds left in the fight, and Holloway challenged Gaethje to stand and trade with them, that really played into Gaethje's game because that's where he shines on paper. Secondly, since Gaethje was losing, a knockout was his only chance to win. Here, you really saw the difference in hand speed and behavior. Gaethje crouched, dropped his head, and threw blind punches. Holloway looked, rolled, and picked the shots. Since Gaethje was ducking, Holloway threw to the body and threw uppercuts. Holloway ducked under a wild and blind hook and threw to the body. Gaethje grabbed Holloway's neck. Think Yusuf. However, Holloway threw an uppercut and lifted Gaethje's head right into a right hook. Think Lopez. The chaining of Holloway's punches and kinetic linking was flawless. Could Holloway normally flatten Gaethje like that? I don't know. But the kinetic power is different if you're already creating a lot of momentum with hooks to the body, but also lifting the head with an uppercut, and then landing a right hook on the button when Gaethje had his mouth open. Talk about seizing an opportunity. There are physical attributes that whisper, and Holloway has them. Rather than brute strength, which most people notice, Holloway has vision, durability, and game sense. With 1 second left, Holloway face-planted Gaethje and walked away because he knew Gaethje was out. Think about the game sense of Jalen Turner, who thought he had Renato Moicano out with a one-punch knockout when Moicano was clearly not out. Holloway had so much preparation for this fight by fighting Alexander Volkanovski 3 times. And Volkanovski is a smaller but better version of Gaethje. Holloway also didn't have to worry about takedowns. People thought Holloway didn't have a chance. But really, what chance did Gaethje have? Knocking Holloway out without a takedown threat? Holloway is now deservedly the BMF champion. In hindsight, of course he is. Now we're at the co-main event. We had all these fights, and we still had more. It was the first time the Octagon had two Chinese fighters fighting for a UFC title. and the two fighters not only carried themselves well, but also showed up for this fight. There were Chinese flags in the audience, and after the fight, champion Weili Zhang invited fans to visit China. Weili Zhang defeated Zhao Nanyan by decision. But really, it could have ended after round one as a submission victory. It's a tricky one because Yan was in the choke and not tapping and seemingly not out. But when Zhang let go, she was out. That can happen when you let go of a choke, where the sudden release of a choke and the rush of blood puts you out. That's probably what the referee was thinking. And though she was not out during the choke, so he let the fight continue. It was a subjective call, and going either way makes sense to me as someone who has grappled for decades. The referee, Jason Herzog, is also a longtime grappler and BJJ black belt. He's also been refereeing for a long time. I used to see him in local shows in LA as a referee decades ago when I was still cornering MMA fights. Zhang was exhausted at one point, but she recovered well. Zhang had been in there with the division's best strikers. But Yan seemed special. It seemed to be vision, composure, and anticipation. Yan can throw a sidekick without having to turn sideways. She could also anticipate when Zhang was coming in. She could land a left hook while stepping out, having Zhang throwing at air for the counter and losing track of her. When Zhang became too predictable with kicks, Yan stepped out to meet the kick and landed a right straight to drop Zhang, who thought her head was out of the way for a counter. Yan is already in her 30s, but she's still getting better. However, her deficit in grappling was the difference. She definitely showed improvements there and surprised Zhang, even on the ground, but it was not sustained long enough to win enough of the rounds. Going back to pace, like Sarukyan, Zhang rushed a bit and didn't use the takedown as a threat enough to conserve energy. Energy conservation is such a critical element of fighting for the title since it's paced over 5 rounds. Now let's talk about the main event for the light heavyweight title between champion Alex Pereira and former champion Jamal Hill. The fight didn't even last the round, which was the perfect main event after so many excellent fights and the card being so long. I talked a lot about vision already in this fight study, and who illustrated that better than Pereira? There was a moment where Pereira got kicked to the groin, but his eyes never veered from Hill. And with Hill as his anchor point, he used his peripheral vision to see Herb Dean walking over to pause the fight, and he actually touched his hand, still using his peripheral vision to tell him to keep the fight going, in which case Dean backed off. During this time, Hill apologized to Pereira, gave him a thumbs up, and nodded to continue. Pereira acknowledged him while touching Dean's hand. Then, when Dean backed off, he touched Hill's hand to say, "Let's continue." Pace, composure, conservation of energy, and vision are all reflected by Pereira in this very short fight. Despite the ending, Hill actually fought well. He landed a lot of shots before the end. He kept moving to get the outside foot position since he was standing right foot forward and Pereira was standing left foot forward. Hill also stepped back to draw Pereira in for the left straight. These are all tried and true southpaw counters, and they all had degrees of success. However, you don't need an outside foot position to hit someone who's in the opposite stance, and you don't only need to throw with the rear limbs. It's still a fight, and there's lots of movement freedom. Pereira also has the power where it doesn't have to land flush to hurt his opponent. It just needs to land. Hill landed a lot of left straights to the body, and left body kicks, outside calf kicks, and even some right hooks. Pereira also landed, but he mostly attacked with his lead limbs. Hill drew him in to get outside foot position for a left straight. But when you do that, you also rotate your head from the back to the front. Pereira countered with a left hook as he stepped in. He initially stepped on Hill's foot, but then his foot happened to fall to Dow's side. This is all to say, Hill was thinking about foot position, and Pereira was just looking at his target and throwing when he saw an opening. He didn't worry about the feet, he worried about what he saw. Pereira's left hook was closer to the target than Hill's left straight. Hill's face rotated to Pereira's fist, and Pereira's fist rotated to Hill's face. Once it hit the ground, Pereira finished Hill with punches. Fighting, like any other physical activity, is not something you can intellectualize. Your body doesn't care about words. It cares about feel. How things feel to your senses, including your eyes. That's how I approach my analysis. I think about the senses and context. That's also my approach to teaching martial arts. On a final note, it was a night for indigenous fighters wearing native-inspired shorts. Both Pereira and Holloway win for shorts of the night. If you like this episode and like what we do, support us on Patreon. We also have the Liberation Martial Arts Program if you want to train with us from wherever you are. It's both theory and practice and removes the need for an instructor. What you're learning is how to teach yourself. It's also an approach you can take with you from the gym into the world. Sponsors get a monthly training session with me, either in person or online. Supporting me not only helps me pay my bills, but it also helps me support my family. Find all our links, including Southpaw merch, at southpawpod.com.